morning, everybody, and welcome. You're here with Justin and Lizzie from Third Space, and this is Turning Towards Life, our Third Space conversation project, podcast, who knows what to call it, but welcome, welcome. This is the 230th something week, Lizzie, that you and I have been together, and I just want to say welcome to everyone who's with us. You are so welcome to be here. And we hope that you'll feel deeply involved and enmeshed and here in this conversation, which starts from a source, which Lizzie, you've chosen this week, and will then unfold in who knows which ways. And we do this in the midst of a growing community. It's been such joy for me to feel and see more and more people coming our way over the last couple of weeks. So welcome to all of you, those of you who've just joined us and those of you who've been part of this conversation for over 4 years. And if you want to be in the conversation with us in an even more interactive way than listening, then it's worth knowing that we have a Facebook group. You can just search for us and join in the conversation there. And you can email us, Justin or Lizzie, or just hello at turningtowards.life. We would love to hear from you.
Thanks, Justin. And also, just to mention, anything that we talk about here, any source that gets read out, you can always find either in the notes, the show notes of the podcast, or on our website, which is www.turningtowards.life. And everything is there historically as well. So you could, there's a little search bar too, so you can type in like stuck or power, you know, a word that's interesting to you, and it will come up with episodes that have something pertaining to your search word, who knows what. So please go there as well. It's a great resource then, and a great resource to send to people as well if you want to share this with people. So here we are. This is our source for this week. It's called Holding Together by David Abram, and it goes like this. There are so many unsung heroines and heroes at this broken moment in our collective story. So many courageous persons who, unbeknownst to themselves, are holding together the world by their resolute love or contagious joy. Although I do not know your names, I can feel you out there.
Thanks, Susie. I'm going to read this again. This dewdrop of a source, tiny and short and filled with power. But I'm going to make an invitation as I read it to all of us, really. Maybe you are someone who, unbeknownst to yourself, are holding the world together. And maybe there are many that you know who are as well. So as I read David Abram's words, maybe it would be a thing to do for us to let ourselves feel the presence of all those who are this, including the possibility it might be us. It's called Holding Together. There are so many unsung heroines and heroes at this broken moment in our collective story. So many courageous persons who, unbeknownst to themselves, are holding together the world by their resolute love or contagious joy. Although I do not know your names, I can feel you out there.
Thanks, Justin. I'm noticing how different it is to receive something that someone reads to me rather than just reading it myself in silence, and how connecting it is to the feeling of everything out there that's not just my own inner world and interpretation of life. It's really beautiful and important. And so I brought this, Justin, because, well, I had this sitting in my collection of little things way before anything. So this is March 22, what's been called a big turning point in our history. And there is really, there's very, very, very difficult things happening in the world. And I don't have a way of saying what's happening, really. I know there's violence. I know there's troops and tanks and horrors happening, but I can't tell you the story really from any kind of authority. I honestly don't know how to say it. But this wasn't written because of what's happening now. This was written, goodness knows, because of what. And so this collective goodness, this collective resolute love has been called upon in us many, 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 many times in history before. And I don't know about you, Justin, but I have an ever-present, fully available pit of despair that I can inhabit about what's happening in the world very, very, very easily, and sometimes find myself in it without having noticed I was heading towards it or anything. It's just I'm in it, shaking and unable to really handle myself. And I'm learning more to know that it's happening and then finding ways to support myself. But this little piece of writing is also really restoring to me, because to me it tells me that it really matters that I don't spend every moment in that pit, because it doesn't help anyone. It doesn't produce anything other than my own extended shakiness and fear and inaction. And when I look around at the things that I can see that are happening in service of being helpful and attending to things that are really needed, what I can see is awakeness and health and resoluteness that maybe gets born of despair but isn't despairing as it's happening. And so I've been really curious, and I know the pieces of me where I've done little things to help, it's only come because I'm alive in myself. Like I had to get some things together and take them somewhere and do something. And I didn't do it moping around. I did it with kind of gusto in my heart, of like, right, this needs to happen. How can I do this? Who do I call? What do I do now? And that didn't come from me being under the covers in my bed crying. I mean, it may have been born there, but I think this piece of reading is talking about this resoluteness that arises and can arise in us, that feels like it's a response that contributes rather than a response that diminishes and leaves me unable to make a difference. And so when I see hundreds of people queuing outside places for 2.5 hours just to be able to give one small bag of things that they can to a place that's distributing blankets to people in Ukraine, for example, when I look at those people, there's a resoluteness in them standing there for that long just to be able to give something, and a resoluteness in the woman who's just opened the back doors of her cafe and decided that's what she's going to do. So I'm feeling really drawn to the kind of consciousness in us that's necessary for things to actually happen, and how important it is that this resolute love or our contagious joy can be in moments like this, when the collective story is not well. And it feels really important to speak about this, because I think as humans, we all have such a tendency towards compassion, so importantly. But certainly where it takes me is that when you suffer, I suffer. And that needs to be true alongside lots of other things, so that things can happen. And so I have to find a way of addressing my own guilt in a way of like, well, I seem to be okay and I'm having a cup of tea. And there are people giving birth to babies in horrific conditions and people being killed in the most horrific ways. And like it all has to find a way to belong next to each other. And me being despairing about something that's not happening to me, but happening to others, can't be the only response I have. Like I have to find more response than that, and let that also drive something in me that brings this resoluteness and brings this contagion of activity and energy and commitment and aliveness.
Before I say any more, Lizzie, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I had to change my sound settings whilst you were speaking. Oh, well, thank you for saying all of that. There's so much in what you said. I was thinking about an invitation that there is in my own spiritual path, in the Jewish path, which is called Kriyat HaTov, which is calling out the good.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one name for what you're talking about. It's one angle on what you're talking about. And I'm feeling so relieved hearing you say what you say, hearing your steadiness and hearing your commitment and courage and hearing your willingness to say, to not make this into some kind of either or decision. Either I have to be, what does David Abram say? I'm just flicking back to it. Either I have to be resolute love or contagious joy. I have to be that and not ever despaired, not ever despairing. So I appreciate very much your framing it as, what if we got to be both? What if we got to despair and this? And I feel really touched by one part in David's language here, which seems so important. There are so many courageous persons who, unbeknownst to themselves, are holding together the world by their resolute love or contagious joy. So that's what you're doing here in this conversation, by speaking in the way that you're speaking, Lizzie, is that. And the reason I want to say it that way is that I have, as you know, over the last few weeks, for quite often and sometimes for quite considerable times, found myself caught in, pulled deeply, deeply into something that is neither resolute love nor contagious joy. Actually, it may have a lot of love in the middle of it, really, but it has also a lot of terror and a lot of shaking and a lot of being frozen. And one of the things that I found out in that time, so I know the truth of what we're talking about, and I know the truth of what David Abram writes about, that something else is called for.
Mm.
And that I'm not living, I don't have bombs raining down on my head, and I'm not having to live in a basement. And I'm not in a country like many countries are, whose economy is unraveling. But I do live in a world where all of that's happening. And I also live in a world where climate change is happening and where, you know, all the things that are happening. And even though that's the case, I also know that it doesn't help me and it doesn't help other people around me for me to be frozen. And yet there's something in all of us that sometimes pulls us that way, some part of us that's traumatized or terrified.
Mm.
And it's not as simple as saying, well, I shouldn't be this way, or even it's not as simple as this move that we've talked about very often of even just recognizing that part of me is traumatized or frozen and wondering what else in me is there. That's not always easily available to us until we're in the orbit of others. And my rescue every time over the last 3 or 4 weeks when I have found myself frozen has been other people. And in every case, it's been people like you, Lizzie, and others who, maybe even unbeknownst to themselves, are holding the world together by staying in contact with that of themselves that is resolute love, and staying in contact with that of themselves that is also contagious joy, right in the heart of the brokenness. Joy that we're here, joy that we can take care of one another, joy that we can face the world, joy at simple things like the magnolia trees are in bloom, joy at seeing the waking face of a member of a family, joy at all of that. And every time my rescue and my capacity to join the world of resolute love or contagious joy has happened, because somebody else has been being that, and then it calls on all that in me that isn't the frozen, terrified, traumatized part of me that's flooding me with its experience. It allows for that, and then it awakens my own courage. So from where I've been experiencing these last few weeks, it seems so clear to me that this isn't a matter of, wouldn't it be nice to feel resolute love or contagious joy? Yes, it might be a lovely thing to be able to feel. But also for the reawakening of one another and the re-coming home of one another, and also our collective kindling, our capacity to respond to whatever circumstance we're in, whatever scale of difficulty and non-difficulty it is, this is the path, and we do it for one another, not just for ourselves.
Mm. Yeah. It's reminding me, Justin, as you're speaking, of my granddad, who was in the, and both my granddads were in the Navy in World War II. And there were lots of stories that came out over the years. But in this conversation, I'm reminded of all of the stories of the need for joy, the need for humor, the need for storytelling, the need for laughing in the face of like really horrific things. And it feels like one of the kind of central tenets of humanness that, you know, without this creative aliveness, there really isn't very many places to go. And someone said to me the other day, you know, this is why, I don't even know how to say this properly because I'm not very good at history and knowing the right terms, but where there are regimes that try to control people very heavily, creativity and art is one of the things that gets taken off the agenda because of this. This is how powerful this is. This kind of aliveness and creation and bringing ourselves to the world as ourselves fully, with our joy and our despair, with the full spectrum of ourselves, has great, great power that makes people afraid if they want to squish and control and turn people into what they think they should be rather than allow them to be themselves, allow the world to be what it is. And so that's part of the inquiry too, Justin, is that it's been shown as a truly powerful source of our humanness, is the way we can create, the way we can have ideas erupt from us and then express ourselves fully. And it feels really important, that thing you said at the beginning, Justin, that this isn't a thing that says this is what we should be doing instead of feeling this frozenness and despair, because it truly isn't. You know, so much of our creativity, so much of our ideas and action gets born of the pits that we find ourselves in, the horrors we find ourselves in. And in order for some action to come out of that, to be born of that, which is this power that we're speaking of, there has to be life force that's moving us, that's taking us somewhere, that's having us move our hands and our mouths and have sound coming out of our beings to create language, to shift the world. So I'm feeling the historic kind of importance and world importance of our own capacity and our own goodness, and how it really matters that when we're not in the thick of it, as in, like you said, we haven't got bombs raining down in our heads, we need to be alive in service of whatever the world is that's going to get born. And we need to be ready, and we need to be open-hearted and soft and willing and wondering and curious. And all of those qualities don't emerge if I don't also get out of my bed as well as wanting to stay in my bed. And I think what I'm experiencing, Justin, is a kind of a greater and greater capacity to choose as this goes on. Like, I know that this is available, but I can in any moment watch a piece of news and I will be straight back into the kind of, for me, it's like a physical bodily pain in the front of my body where it's quite hard to watch much, really, because I'm very quickly, it takes me down into that place. So I'm finding I need to know what my minimum is, to know what's going on, to feel like I'm being responsible to the world, like I understand what's happening, but to not like binge on it, to then keep that feeling intensified is not a healthy practice, and it doesn't serve anybody. It just serves the part that the hungry part of me that's fearful and enraged and worried and concerned and terrified. And I have to feel like that's a part of me, but it's not all of me. It certainly isn't all of me. And so in remembering that and practicing breathing and knowing that it's a part, and there's also a me here, as well as all the different parts of me, I feel really committed to continuing to deepen my capacity to choose and to do things like you're saying, like connecting to other people and doing things that I know bring me into different parts of myself, so that that part doesn't get negated or pushed down or squashed. It's there and alive and available whenever it's appropriate to be there, but it isn't what determines how I act, how I feel every moment of the day. I'm not giving it the power that it could take if I allowed it to.
You know, someone who's been finding it sometimes way, way harder than I'm used to make that shift in these last few weeks, the shift from to there's something else here of me. I feel so grateful for all of us who at any point are able to do that and make ourselves available to others. That's, you know, I was thinking whilst you were speaking about how your commitment that you're expressing and just being with you now gets me deeply back in contact with that of me that is alive and hopeful, not hopeful as in knowing how things are going to turn out, but hopeful about our capacity and generous. And the, you know, there are parts of me that I think carry an enormous amount of historical inherited trauma that are really stuck in the thing that you said is so unhelpful, which is maybe if we stay here and hold on really tight and get really afraid, that will make everything all right. Yeah. They are really powerfully stuck in that. So one of the things that I got onto whilst you were speaking was, it's not only for me in this moment of just us being together and the restorative capacity of being in this conversation, I'm looking at David Abrams' work and I'm thinking, oh, look what he did in writing this, which I'm sure is part of a bigger piece of work, but in writing from the middle of the broken moment, because he had the capacity to do that, to write something and make it available in the world, he reaches us and gives us the opportunity for each of us of contacting that of ourselves that can stand in the middle of this moment with all of its multidimensional calamities as well as possibilities, and be in contact with our courage and resolute love and contagious joy. We we are helped because he, from in the middle of his experience, wrote this for us. And so every time, what strikes me is that alongside what you're talking about, where we find it in ourselves to do what you're saying, to undo the getting caught, or where we find others, because when we're with them, that does that for us, mm-hmm. then there's something for us to do, which is to share what we see and what we feel with other people. Because it's in the receiving of words and images and music and poetry and all the different forms of expression that you were talking about before, that so often repressive regimes want to suppress because they're so they make so much possible. It feels to me doubly, triply important that we share what we have, that we put our resolute love or contagious joy into word and into song and into images, and we share them without worrying about, but I'm not an artist, or I don't have a big Instagram following, or it could be with the person who we live with, if there's someone that we live with, or with a friend, or it could be on a social media page that's followed by, no, you're not famous, but people read you.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have the opportunity, that the point that you made about repressive regimes was so interesting to me, because I could feel in me that there's the possibility of living inside an inner repressive regime that goes, freeze, keep it, don't express. And, you know, it's the inner dynamic and the outer dynamic are never that really that different to one another. We're able to do to ourselves what other people can do to us, but we're also able to. So I'm feeling this deep kindling of a deep call for all of us to share our art, by which I mean what we have to feel and what we have to say that we know can be a gift to others. I'm not calling for what terrifies others or freezes others as much here as I'm calling for that which kindles our capacity.
Yeah, it feels so important. And I can feel, it's weird as you saying that, Justin, I can feel my commitment to my fear. You know, when you said there's a way that if I just stay here and I feel terrified, it's going to make it all better. It's like I'm adding to the reason why this needs to stop. You know, I can find the part of me that wants to add to the suffering so that the suffering gets bigger, and then everyone goes, oh gosh, this needs to stop. It's really compelling. It's really compelling. And it's also, it requires something else to happen in order for it to be resolved. You know, if I just keep in a ball, someone's going to come and save me, someone's going to come and do something. And so the parts that come online that aren't that fearful ball, they're empowered parts of me. They're like, well, I'll be the one who addresses the suffering rather than create more of a reason for someone to come. And it's a really powerful, compelling thing to want to just make the suffering bigger. I can feel it so strongly as you were talking, and I really understand it in myself as a way to relate to the way that fear begins to get more and more buy-in, if you like, from other fear. It kind of propagates itself inside of me, and I'm imagining it's the same on the outside. And if I look, I can see. But it's really also tricky because fear can look like power so many times. It can look like togetherness. It can look like doing powerful things. And so to do things from a different source of power, that's the power of being loving or being joyful, being aliveness, being expressive, as you're saying, bringing myself in my full expression to the world, and that being what power is. It feels like, and actually it ties into this thought I keep having, like the majority of the world doesn't want bad things to happen. Like that is simply true. The grand, vast, almost entirety, if you look at the scale of all of us, And then there's this like pockets that do want things to happen and they have all the power. It's really kind of confounding to me that the world is like this. Because if you counted up the individuals that don't want this to happen, it's way more than the individuals that do. And then that saying of, you know, bad things happen when good people do nothing comes to mind as well. And so I feel like I don't know, this conversation is kind of renewing my commitment to seeing all the ways that my kind of victimhood can build on itself and to be really aware of that happening. And also keeping on recommitting to calling out the good, as you said, Justin, having that as a practice, calling out the good in myself and calling out the good in others and recognizing and seeking the good, like looking for good news, looking for how we're responding to this so that I can continue with my profound belief of goodness in the world, which seems to be ever confirmed when I look at more than just the horrors that are being reported on. When I look at what the response is, I find my breath coming back and something I can join with and something I can do. And it's really extraordinary. So I want to thank David Abram as well for pointing at whatever time in history he did to be able to feeling something out there, something other than my perception of what's going on, much, much more, like reaching for the more, reaching for the bigger than me and what I can see in my small circle of where I look. And knowing that I don't know their names, but there is like goodness abound, quite extraordinary. And I can find that and I can join in with that. That is a possibility in amongst my horrors and brokenness and shakiness and fear.
Yeah, I'm really struck by something as we come towards the end, Lizzie. This conversation that you and I are having, I know many, many, many other people are alongside us, but one of the things that we're doing, because I can feel us doing it right now, is we're right now having the conversation with one another that calls out the good and puts each of us in contact with our own resolute love and contagious joy and courage. We're doing that for ourselves here. And we're doing that for one another, you for me and me for you. And then we're sharing it. And it reminds me that the thing for us to share, the path that makes this generous for one another, is to find in and between ourselves what really touches us and share that. Not something clever or something artfully constructed to produce this or that effect, just what's real. So I'm so glad to be able to do that, and that we have the technology available to us that is actually bonkers and miraculous, that you and I can sit and talk on a Sunday morning from our respective places, and then it can also unfold into the world and meet other unsung people who are or want to hold the world together.
Thank you, Justin, for being here and for being the space in which renewal can happen. It's really beautiful and important. And thank you everyone for being together with us here. And thank you, David Abram, for having these words be your expression. And we'll be back next Sunday again. And just to say, Justin, thank you. And thank you for your just facing into all of this with me. And obviously when we bring sources, we don't check on each other. We don't vet them. And so we have to have faith in one another's bringing. And thank you for that faith that you have and that I have as well. Okay, folks, we'll see you next week at 9 o'clock here on Turning Towards Life.
Bye, everyone.